Hello and welcome to In Ink We Trust, Tattoo and Art Culture in the San Fernando Valley, bringing you the latest who's making a mark on the Valley tattoo scene. I am your host, Anthony Sanchez. Today we're going to talk to Nate Sigurd from Tribute Tattoo in West Hills. Nate is the CEO of Skin Motion, a tattoo technology which turns audio into a tattoo you can hear. The tech became viral in 2017. There are about 40 artists that use this method of tattoo. He's also a projection artist with working on projects like So You Think You Can Dance. This, among many other talents that we hope to talk about. Thank you for coming by the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You like that intro?
Oh yeah,
it was wordy.
Like, you just got through it. Like that was awesome. I feel like I've tried to write bios for myself, whatever, and it's always like too much. And you just got it. Like,
just... yeah, my bios are terrible, but my own personal bio. But obviously, someone else can write for you.
Yeah, it's a lot easier that way.
Yeah, I hate that when they're like, write it in third person, and you're like, all right.
Yeah, but I'm not a third person. I'm me.
Yeah. I have feelings. So, are you a morning person?
No.
No. It's terrible, huh?
No. It's not terrible at all. I mean, like, I have two kids who are under three right now. So, like, whether or not I'm a morning person, I'm now a morning person regardless. So, I'm adjusting. But it's not my natural best time by any means.
Yeah, so, you consider yourself more of an afternoon or evening person? Like, night owl?
I feel like the most progress that I made or, like, the best time my brain is just like working the best or whatever is probably between 11 p.m. and 2 or 3 in the morning. I mean, it used to be that late. Now I fall asleep at like 11 because I'm exhausted, but it used to be that I was way more of like a late night person. And I think it just has to do with like the world calming down. Like everything else is a lot more quiet. There's like less distractions. So
yeah,
I could just like focus, super focus, yeah, and get more done.
I know because of my jet lag, I've been waking up at 2 a.m. And I just go out and get some fast food, which is bad for me, but it's really awesome to be in LA at 2 in the morning.
Yeah, it's really pretty. Like, there's no traffic. Yeah, I'm a fan, actually. Besides it, like, everyone else on the road is probably drunk.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
I guess not over here in the Valley. It's all, like, older. I guess if I head more towards Hollywood, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah. Down in, like, the city,
yeah,
for sure. Out here, it's just empty.
Yeah.
Like, I'm the only one.
Yeah, and once you go past the 101, 405 out here, it's all just, it becomes very suburban. So as an entrepreneur, do you even like that title?
Is that kind of like... I mean, it's probably the most accurate thing to tell people about what I do, because it takes too long to list off the, like, 20 other things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess I have like a little bit of an issue with the word entrepreneur just because so many people call themselves entrepreneurs, but then just like talk about business all the time and don't really like do anything.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, think they can like just hire people to do everything for them and then not have to do stuff. And so I think that's like the danger of calling yourself an entrepreneur is that, like, you know, it should imply that you're doing basically everything yourself.
True.
But the other way around is that it ends up being a lot of people who kind of want to like middleman things and, you know, not really produce anything. Mm. So, you know.
Yeah, I meet a lot of people like that too, especially in LA. There's a lot of
yeah, everyone's got like a brilliant idea, you know, like.
Yeah. Do you watch the Silicon Valley? Because I've just started rewatching that.
Yeah,
it probably is in that vein, in that tone.
Yes, I mean I love that show. And it's too real. Like like when the Soundwave tattoos went viral and when we started Skin Motion, and it was just like a really crazy time. And so we rewatched Silicon Valley because I had watched a little bit of it prior, but as we were watching it, it was just like, oh my god, these guys are living our life. And really, I think like I wish we had raised as much money as those guys, but we're not doing compression algorithms, so it's a little bit different. But the thing I think that's the most similar, probably just from the show, that what we experienced was just how much like one day it was like, oh my god, this is it, we're winning, this huge opportunity is coming, there's so much potential. And then like the next day I would wake up and like there'd be like just some bit of bad news or some challenge or something, and it would just be like, oh no, this whole thing is ruined, like it's never gonna work, like, oh my god, what are we gonna do? And that shift at the beginning was like, you know, the wave of up and down was like hourly, you know, it was like every hour there was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, you know, and then like a couple of months in, the kind of drew out a little bit. So it was like every other couple of days, it would be like, we're doing great. Oh, we're not doing so good. And I feel like now we're like almost 2 years in or whatever, and or a little more than 2 years in, but 2 years since we launched, and
the wave has elongated much longer to where it's like, oh, we're doing really good, like this feels good. So, you know, I'm sure there'll be some point where I'm like, oh my God, what are we doing? But, you know, that wave at least has like mellowed out. And I, you know, I hope for the characters on that show that there is some kind of mellows out too, but I feel like it probably won't. So
yeah, I think the last episode's coming up.
I haven't seen this new season. I'd like to, but
I stopped at season one, and then my really good friend, she was like, oh, it's so good. And then I watched another program and they were like, we're sad to see the show go. And I was like, I better jump back in because I'm missing something. And I think the good thing about having the space from when I first watched season one was, at first I thought it was just about Silicon Valley and how silly they are, but now I realize it's about entrepreneurship and that whole, that all those things that are happening from, you know, people pulling the rug out from you and people being excited about you and then not being excited about you. So it sounds a little bit of like what you're talking about there.
Oh yeah. Well, and you know, they filmed that show in the Valley.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. I got a couple of friends who work on it, whatever, but they used to like block off our streets over in Encino to like film whatever, film over there, so. It's a Valley show.
If you watch, do you know about Cobra Kai? This Karate Kid kind of, it is like a new series on YouTube.
I haven't seen it.
Okay, so it's like the Karate Kid characters, like the Russo and whatever, and my apartment was used as the exterior.
Oh, nice.
So when my brother came over, he was like, oh, they took pictures. Yeah. I was like, so yeah, the Valley's still kind of a thing.
I think so. I mean, in the 25 years whatever I've been running around out here, like it always seems to have some kind of cool pop culture thing going on.
Yeah, of course there's a Tom Petty too with all of his songs.
Yeah, right. Right,
so what, as someone who works on so many projects, what's the toughest thing about keeping everything going?
I'm focusing.
Focusing.
I mean, just figuring out what's the most important thing that needs to get done right now. I mean, because I guess that was like the biggest question of my 20s. You know, I got really stuck on this like philosophical thing of just like, if you can do anything, what do you do? You know, if everyone's connected, if everything is in this like delicate balance and harmony with each other, then, you know, by putting myself in the position of having to think like, if I could do anything right now, like, what do I choose to do? And like, really not just the like what to choose to do, but why to choose to do it became very important. And so I spend probably most of my time trying to figure out like what's the most important thing to do right now and why should I be doing that. And you know, usually it's like making sure that anybody who has a problem is not having a problem. That's typically like the first thing, you know, especially like my family, the people I work with, my customers and clients, you know, there's kind of like a hierarchy of who am I making sure everybody is doing okay.
Right.
But then even just like on projects wise, it's, you know, what do I feel like is going to like cause the greatest amount of service just based on like what I can do right now? 'Cause there's only so much I can do. So just, you know, what if I don't do it right now is not going to get done.
So walk us through all the different things that like you can chronologically might be easier, like as a teenager.
Chronology is probably easier. Yeah. So I grew up in Agora.
Okay.
And in like middle school, I started teaching myself like graphic design, and like I had a really good friend and who was good at websites and stuff, and so he taught me how to build websites. And this is like back in the days of like when AOL gave you a little page you could like have a web page on, or like GeoCities or whatever. Yeah,
I think they finally took a lot of GeoCities down.
I think, yeah, I was thinking about it the other night, like my first websites I was building, I figured out how to take like a portable CD player and like run an 1/8-inch cord from the CD player into the computer, and so I was like recording Green Day songs like from my portable CD player into my computer. They could only be like 20 seconds long or something because the files would get too big.
Yeah,
and I would put those up on my website on GeoCities, and I'd be like, check out my favorite band, Green Day, like they're the best. And I would do like little radio shows and stuff. Oh, I like record myself. Yeah. So anyway, that I learned how to build websites like real young, and in high school, I started doing it like professionally, and like kind of like, I don't say dropped out of school, but school became much less important. I ended up doing homeschool so that I could just work and do mm-hmm. what was important to me. But I was making almost more money than I was making in my 20s as a 14-year-old doing this. And it's like 1999. This is like the internet's blowing up at this point. Mm-hmm. And also I learned how to play music. So I played music, and that kind of like gave me something to build websites for. Cause I was like, you know, building database driven backend websites for my band. So they could like log in and add news to the website or add show dates or whatever. I was just like building all this stuff out, and I would sit in class and like literally code, like by hand on paper, like figure out like how I was going to build everything and then go home and like actually do it. And like I had this one friend who was just super good. Now he like works for Amazon. And he's, you know, like the boss of bosses, you know, and he taught me a lot of stuff too. So I did that. And then after high school, same, just kept doing music and websites and stuff like that. And finally, when I was 22, I was working for a startup down in LA. And so in Silicon Valley, actually, in the first season, there's a character who basically gets hired for a job, and then they don't have him work on anything, and he just like hangs out all day, and he gets paid to like hang out all day, and like the idea is for him not to go work for someone else.
Right.
And a kind of a similar thing happened where some stuff was going on in a company that like I knew about, and they didn't want me going anywhere else or doing anything. And so I basically was getting paid to just sit there, and I kind of like went crazy. It just felt so wrong, you know, like yeah. The whole thing.
What were they trying to stop you from stopping? I don't know. What did they see? What potential did they see? Do you
well,
know?
Well, no, I mean, there was stuff going on within the company that like wasn't explicit, you know, like nobody ever said like, this is a thing and it's happening. But like there were signs of a thing happening everywhere. And it just got to the point finally where like there was a explicit like evidence of a thing happening. And you know, I was young, and I was, you know, I approached a situation from a position of I want to help, and I want to make things better, and I want whatever. And they were like, okay, well, the way that you can help make things better is by like not doing anything, keeping your mouth shut, and sitting over there. You know, like you're basically, I had a special project, and I just like did my special project.
Okay.
But I watched quantum physics videos from MIT all day, and I got paid for it. And after a while, I kind of started going crazy.
Right.
You know, because I'm sitting here going, like, what am I doing with my life? Like, why am I choosing to do this? Like, is it just because money? I mean, like, I like having money, but it's not fulfilling. And really, it, like, really set me on a loop of that, like, I was wasting, like, what am I doing with my life? And one day, I got so fed up with it that I went down to the beach and was sitting at the beach and was just kind of like, ah, like, what am I going to do with my life? And I got a phone call. And the phone call is from my buddy who was cleaning a fish tank over at this guy Jim Hayek's house. Jim Hayek is a tattoo artist out in Newbury Park back in, you know, I think he's in Westlake now. He's working at Made Gray. But at this point, he had, like, his own, like, private studio, whatever. And he's like, I'm over at his house. He said he wants to teach you how to tattoo. And I was like, oh, my God, this is the answer to everything. And he's like, when can you get here? I was like, I'll drive over there right now. So I drove straight over to this guy's place. And started talking to Jim and was telling him about, you know, this is what I do. And he's like, how much money do you make? And I told him how much money I made. And he was like, you're an idiot. Like, you should not quit your job. You should keep doing that. And I was just kind of like, all right, well, this is what I want to do, you know? And I talked to him some more. And like, really what it came down to is just like, websites are so ephemeral. Like, they are temporary. Like, even we, you know, we build them, we're constantly updating them, we're constantly like rebuilding them. Like, everything is just this like constantly changing, living, dynamic thing. And it's kind of frustrating, you know. It's a little bit frustrating to like put all your time and energy into something that like in 6 months is just going to be garbage, you know, because you're just going to throw it away and like build a new thing. And I had been thinking a lot about tattoos because of music and all these different things. And you know, I even bought a tattoo machine prior to like meeting this guy, but like I was too scared to use it. You know, like I kind of sat in my closet and I would like research online about tattoos and stuff. But like I did maybe like one on myself and was just like, this is scary. Like I was way too intimidating. Like I do not have the authority to be messing people up with this thing. You know?
I always like hearing that about people that tattoo on themselves. Where did you tattoo on yourself then?
Oh man. I mean, I have like a bunch on my thighs I did, and But like at first, I forget, like I have a dot on my knee. Like I was tattooing an orange one day, just like screwing around tattooing an orange, like right when I got it. And I got these Numa tattoo machines, but I was like right when Numa tattoo machines were coming out. And I met Carson. Carson sold me some Numas. So I'm like tattooing this orange, my buddy's there, and he's like, do it on you. I was like, fine. So I do a dot on my knee, and I didn't realize like it had like citrus, the citrus from the orange, whatever. And uh-huh. So it just stung like hell, like not just from the needle,
but
like.
Because the color has a citrus in it?
No, like I was tattooing an orange. And so like the citrus from the orange got into the tattoo. Like it was just stupid. Stupid. I was just being stupid. But I was, and I did a little stupid one on him, whatever. Like, but I had no business tattooing anybody. And it wasn't until I met Jim, and Jim was like, I'll teach you. Like, you are into it. And he, I kind of like passed his like litmus test of, are you an idiot or not? So I started working with him, and I basically quit my job and just started apprenticing with Jim and just hung out there all the time. And
so that was your major gig for a while?
So, tattoo it? Like, yeah. Working over at Jim? Well, so I stayed with, because of all my internet work and everything, I had saved up a pretty good amount of money or whatever, and so I just lived off that. This is, I guess, 2006 or 7 or something, and so I just kind of, like, lived off that and tattooed at Jim's, and then I had a couple months later, maybe, like, 6 months later, a friend of mine was moving to Northern California and was like, can you move all my stuff with me up to Northern California? I was like, yeah, for sure, because I got a truck. So that was kind of like when I left apprenticing to go out and start my own tattoo adventure, And it was not a super formal apprenticeship. And so there was no like graduation into like, you're now an ordained, tat wizard or something like that.
Right.
It was just kind of like life, I think like I, especially back then more, but I tend to flow with things as they're happening. And that was just in the flow then. So that became like my thing, like tattooing, once I had started apprenticing and everything else, I kind of got rid of the tech guy identity, let all that go. The music guy, like let all that go, and was just like, no, like all I care about is tattoos because they're so real. Like it's, I have this forever, it's like,
right.
It's the exact opposite of building a website, because it's so permanent, because it's going to last everything. And, so I just got obsessed with the culture and with the actual images. And really then I started learning about working with people, like communicating in like kind of somatic talk therapy, but without having any idea that's like what was going on. That's kind of what ended up started happening. So I did that. I traveled around with him for not with him. I mean, he moved up there, but I kind of traveled in between Northern California, LA, and Phoenix for 2 or 3 years and just like stayed with people and tattooed all their friends and would, spend a week in a place and then go to Sedona for a couple days and just chill out and then like drive back to LA and stay and tattoo a bunch of people and go to Northern California. And I just did that for a while. And kind of what like broke that cycle was I got a phone call one day, and it was my buddy who I'd gone to like middle school with, whatever, and stayed in touch with. He was in music and everything too. And he's like, hey, I'm out in Texas with Sublime with Rome, and they all want tattoos. Do you want to come out and tattoo them? And I was like, of course I want to come out and tattoo them. That would be the coolest. So I threw my dog in the car and we drove out to Texas, and I spent a week there with them, like just hanging out, listening to them record all day, drinking, tattooing them. And I left and they called me and they're like, hey, we want you to come back. And I was like, whoa, all right. So I came back like a week later, spent another week out there or whatever. And they were like, dude, we want you to do our album cover. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. So I came back to LA and I'm staying with Rome and make their album cover or whatever. And then one thing leads to another, and I go on tour with them. So I toured with them in 2011 over their like summer tour, just tattooing everybody and filming everything and, making their media and whatever. And that was just like every dream I had ever had as a kid coming true for like one of my favorite bands, And did that again with them the next year, except for I did all the projections. So I started doing like projections. I mean, I had done a little bit of that before, but like I started doing projections for them during their shows. So that was super cool.
So tell me about projections then, because that's, I know in theater, it's becoming like the thing right now.
Yeah.
Is, and there's been a lot of really interesting shows. I even think they did in, I don't know if you follow theater, in New York, they did the Network. Remember the movie Network?
No.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, I wish I did.
I'm mad as hell, and you're not going to take this anymore.
Oh, okay, okay,
line,
yeah,
you
yeah.
know that line. They did a version of it, and they basically did a lot of projections because it's like takes place in a newsroom, and it, you know, I didn't get to, you know, I can't afford to go out there and see it. But all these great things where they're using projection to kind of like create these different spaces that you don't, because of multimedia, ultimately, it's like it's more than one information now. It's not, it's more than just having a person on the stage now. It's like creating something instantaneously.
Yeah.
So is that
well,
for you?
Well, so I got into doing projections kind of roundaboutly. Right before I went on tour with Sublime, I went to my first, like, they call them transformational festivals, like an EDM festival,
okay.
right? Like, it was lightning in a bottle. But I had a friend who was performing at, I had a bunch of friends who were performing that year. And I went and I stayed, like, camped with this this guy, Andrew Jones. And at the time, I didn't know who he was, but everybody else did. Everybody in this whole place knew who he was. He was like a god at this place, and I had no idea. But yeah, so I was there. But I was there, like, they had brought me because they want me to like film and like help them like make some media or whatever. I was like, yeah, for sure. Because I guess I left out whatever, like in all this stuff. I was really into digital photography, and I was really into HDR photography before that was like a button you could push on your phone. And I wrote an ebook about that, so you sell that on the internet, whatever. So I've been in like photography and video and recording music, like I've been doing all of those things like native, like they were all part of everything I was doing this whole time. But it was never like for money, except for the ebook thing.
Right.
But for the most part, I was doing it because I loved it. But anyway, oh god, I don't even remember.
Andrew Jones.
So thank you. I'm out at light. I went to Lightning Ball with Andrew Jones. Andrew Jones is a like a digital art wizard, like literally a wizard, and he's got the long hair and like the whole cape thing, whatever, like full on wizard. Okay.
How many? And, this morning I was remembering how my mom would cheer us up. She'd let us like create like little cape.
Yeah.
Like,
cool.
Like, this guy, like, he just made it his adult.
It's his adult life. Yeah. I mean, now less a little. I mean, I've seen him recently. He's not so wizard out, but he's even more a wizard. But he did this thing where his partner, she would go up and dance on the stage, like, and it was like the main Saturday night at 10 p.m. thing. Like everybody waited for this thing, and she would go up and she would dance. And as she would dance, he had a tablet and he would draw on his tablet. And as he would draw on his tablet, it would project onto her, and as she was dancing, so she was like holding an orb that was like sparkling and glowing, and as she would dance, he could move the orb over her, and like all these things would happen. It was the most amazing thing. Everybody in the place was completely transformed, and like people were doing some visuals at shows then, but like that was the first time I had ever seen anybody like change reality, you know? Here's this person dancing on this stage, like, you know, she's clearly like moving energy and like flowing and everything, but like the way that he was able to add projections to that, like, showed you what maybe you couldn't see. And we're so visual. I mean, like with TV and I mean, like, think about like your reptilian brain and how like the most important thing for survival is what you can see. And the second most important thing for survival is what you can hear. And so it's like in that order, kind of your brain is processing things at that hierarchy. And like, it's, you know, we all know we can listen to music and we all sync up with each other and it feels so great. But like, if you add visual to that, you're able to access more of the processing power of the brain and sync people deeper, more into that feeling of, you know, where you're kind of conducting them through an energetic experience. And anyway, so I'm like watching him do this. I'm learning from him, and I spent like a week out there with them learning about how he does all these different things. And then this other guy, Jonathan Singer, who's now he does the visuals for Grateful Dead. And the Grateful Dead's like last 2 years of touring.
They're still going, huh?
Dude, with John Mayer. It's huge.
Oh, yeah, John Mayer.
It's huge. Like, they sell out stadiums across the country. And it's not cheap. And
fish,
you know,
is still a thing too.
Fish is still a thing.
They're part
too.
Of that,
they just,
right?
I think they just played like 2 days ago or something.
Yeah.
I saw somebody post about it. But Grateful Dead's productions are huge. Like, you know, they have a 100-foot video wall behind them while they play. You know, like of the best quality. Which, as a video projections person, you're like, yes, I want that, like, super good quality. So anyway, I learned from Andrew, I learned from Jonathan, and then I went out on tour with Sublime. While I was with them, they were like, we want to maybe do some videos. And I was like, well, who's going to play the videos? Well, you want me to make some videos? Well, I'm going to play the videos too. They're like, okay. And I literally learned how to use Modulate, like, all the way on the airplane to the tour, like, and was just like, I'm going to figure this out. But I, you know, as they'd be playing, I'd be showing, like, pot leaves on the screens, you know, and they're playing Smoke Two Joints and there's some pot leaves on the screens, and literally, not to say that I'm taking credit for it, but like the whole audience would just like start smoking immediately, and it just, this giant cloud of stuff would come up and be like, oh man, like I could tell that what the videos I was playing were having this effect on everybody. Sometimes there would be like a certain image that like really got everyone, and you'd hear people go like woo all at the same time. It was like, wow, like, you know, here are my heroes playing some of my favorite music, and I'm able to like add anything to that to make everybody else in the audience like have a deeper experience where they're feeling more connected with everything that's going on. And that's why I got into it. But really, it's just super fun. I mean, like, it's probably one of the most fun things. The last like 2 years, I've been doing a lot of visuals for my buddy Bryce Vine, who is more in like the EDM pop kind of world, but it's super fun. Like a couple times a year they'll fly me out, I'll go out to a festival with them, and we'll go do visuals or whatever. And I'll do his visuals, it's super fun. But yeah, I mean, I think it was definitely getting into projections and visuals and things that then I started doing projection map paintings, and that's kind of like a level of augmented reality, but it's like in real life. And I painted all these paintings, a couple paintings with an artist, Nina Topinko. And after we painted them, we realized we could project on them and make them like come to life. And so we did that at a couple art galleries, and people wanted to be able to do it at home. They were like, how do I have this painting on my house at home? But setting up a projector to like projection map a painting in somebody's house is like just way too difficult for reasons I like could talk to you about for 5 hours. And
But I think there's people that could afford to.
It's not a matter of like affordance. I think that's like the issue in having something like that. It's like if someone bumps the painting at all, or like the painting just like naturally shifts on the walls because you're like listening to your music in the room or whatever, it's not going to be aligned anymore. And like for whatever reason, as many people as I've ever tried to teach how to like projection map things and line them up with the projector or whatever, like, I seem to be one of few people who knows how to do that.
You'd be the repair guy every time it moves.
Exactly.
Then, right?
So I end up like putting myself in this position of having to like constantly be like in this like service position to them or whatever. So now they're having to pay some service fee contract. Like, nah.
Right.
So
I mean, short of it being in an actual gallery or a museum then.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because there at least you have like a curator or somebody you could like work with to make sure that it's perfect. Or if it's not perfect, someone call me. Now there's a device that's called Lightform, which actually automatically projection maps things for you. You just like stick it on top of your projector and it just like finds the artwork and maps the whole thing for you. So like that is a huge solution, but that only came out like a year or two ago. So before all of that, I was figuring, someone told me at an art gallery, they're like, why don't you use an app? And they're like, there's this company that makes an augmented reality app that you could use to make your paintings animated. And I was like, oh, of course. And so I did that. And that's how I first learned augmented reality, whatever, and started like messing with that. And so it's kind of all of these things like leading up and happening with each other, that without all of them happening when they happened and everything else that was going on, like when I did a tattoo of a sound wave on some of my friends and my partner Juliana goes, wouldn't it be cool if you could play that back? My brain was just like, oh, of course I could do that. I could do that with all these other things I learned how to do. And it was just like, oh, the next evolution of all these other things that are happening.
So
like,
good segue into your skin motion.
Yeah.
Which I was like, I totally dropped the ball. I was going to like maybe print something and like test the app here audience.
I think I have we could do it on this card.
Okay. So you create the sound. So people put it on. Maybe I'll let you explain it better.
I want to hear how you explain it.
So this is what I understood from my research. You get the app, you record a sound. The sound, then they can print it somewhere. You don't have to print it yourself, though. You bring it to the studio, and you guys print it, and then tattoo it on somebody, and then you use the app again to listen to the sound. And then I think the only caveat was that, like, it has to be on a flat surface on your body, right? Because...
doesn't exist. It's a trick. Well, yeah. So, you did good. Okay. That was, like, a very accurate description. Yeah, so... Juliana was like, wouldn't it be cool if you could play that sound back? I was like, I could totally do that. So I made these two tattoos I did on my friends. I made them work. I made them play back. And they got Elton John's Tiny Dancer. But they just wanted the wave. Like, they just wanted the image. It was like a friend tattoo between them, you know? And they were happy with just the picture. So when I made it play back for them, they were like, oh, that's cool. And they did a little video of it. And they posted it on their Facebook. And when they did that, all these people started commenting on it, being like, what is that? What is that? No way. Like, you're faking us out. Like, that's not real. A lot more harsh internet kind of talk than that, but you get it.
And the internet trash talking? Never.
Yeah. And like, that kind of sparked me a little bit, just like that people would think it was cool, but also kind of the controversy behind it, whatever. And I was like, oh man, like, I'm gonna do another one. And I was about to do, like, I was gonna do a tattoo for a live Twitch, like, for a Twitch fundraiser. This group of people run a Twitch network out of, like, North Hollywood. They have a whole house converted into, like, a Twitch channel. It's awesome. And they were doing a 48-hour, like, fundraiser to send kids in Africa to college or something like that. And they wanted me to be there, like, at the end for when they had done a certain milestone, somebody was going to get a tattoo. And I was like, oh, of course. Like, that sounds super fun. So the night before I was going to go to that, I was like, I think I should tattoo one of these on myself. So I tattooed one on my leg. And while I did it, I had Juliana film me. And so she's filming me while I'm tattooing it. And... then after I did the tattoo, I animated it. I made the whole thing playback, and I bought soundwavetattoo.com, and I did the Soundwave Tattoo page on Facebook, and I made the Soundwave Tattoo Instagram, and I made the YouTube page. Like, I did like all those different things. And then I put up a website, and on the website, all there was just this 30-second super mysterious video that shows me doing one on myself, but you can't see it's me. And then you see the phone holding it over and it playing back, and then just with a link to the website, and then the website just had a mailing list that says, do you want one? Type in your email, you know? And that was it. And I put it on Facebook the next day and got like a million views in 24 hours and was like, oh, whoa.
You're like, I have to actually do this now.
Right? Kind of.
You were like, I was going to put it off.
I thought it was a cool art project. Like, I thought it was like a thing that, like, maybe I would end up tattooing like 20 of these on people. Mm-hmm. You know, like, maybe people are going to see this and think it's cool, and they're going to be like, hey, man, can I get tattooed by you? And be like, sure, I'll do one on you. You know, like, whatever.
Is that something exclusively you do, though?
Soundwave tattoos?
Yeah, the Soundwave tattoos?
No way. No. Right. No. I mean, not by any means. That was my first response. But actually, you know, I woke up to this. Like, I went to sleep and it was like, oh, we're getting some views. Like, that's cool. But when I woke up the next day, I woke up to, like, my phone exploding from everyone being like, you're going viral. Oh, my God, you're going viral. And, like, half of those phone calls were like, you need to get a lawyer. You know, and I was like, oh, shit. So I get on the, I mean, but that's what, you don't want to hear that. Like, you don't want to hear your phone going crazy in the morning.
Especially getting a lawyer, because then you know, you're like, oh, this is, like, really serious.
Yeah,
like,
you don't want to wake up to your friends telling you, you need a lawyer. Like, that is not, you know, that's not good. It's not good.
But you
good
had to, like, trademark and do all that stuff, right?
So, with all my experience in creating things, I had never, like, had to really deal with legal. You know, that was not anything I really have to deal with. So, you know, I had to get a lawyer. And so I got on the phone with a lawyer like that day. I actually talked to like two or three lawyers that day, figured out, oh, well, we got to patent this. So I actually had to take my video down, even though it was going viral. Like, I had to go take it down and then like write the patent with a lawyer. Spent a couple of days working on that with him, got it filed. And as soon as we got the patent filed, like a week later, I was able to put it back online. And when I was so scared that when I put it back up that it would be dead.
Right. You know, like, people have been, because the internet, people could be over it in a day.
Turns out, actually, by taking it down for a week, it just made people go, did you guys see that thing?
More like, mystery,
did it,
right?
Yeah, I was like, did it exist? Like, I don't know.
I can't have it. Now I must have it.
Kinda. Yeah. Kinda. And it was not intentional at all, but, you know, like, if I'm to create a script on how maybe to make something go viral, like, I feel like that maybe plays into a little bit. I don't know. So I put it back up, and then it got 15 million views in a couple days. And, you know, at that point, it was like, okay, this is a real thing. So, you know, Juliana and I were kind of sitting there, and it was like, look, like, if we decide to do this, like, this is going to completely take over our lives for 5 years, 10 years, maybe. Like, this is going to be this, like, huge thing that we are responsible for. And, like, you know, prior to this, we were kind of, like, happy to be van life people. Like, I don't think either of us really are, like, trying to amass a ton of, you know, material objects and, like, status and whatever. We're just like, oh, we want to be in nature and be happy, like, for the most part. And so it was kind of like, you know, we're going to really have to, like, step up and do this. And we were like, well, and I guess simultaneously kind of influencing that is, like, we're getting hundreds of emails from people being like, my mom just died and I really want one of those tattoos of my mom's voice, you know, or my baby died and I want the heartbeat of my baby that died. Or, you know, like, and we had just had our first daughter like 3 months before that. And so, you know, we're getting like all these messages of people being like, this person died and I like have to get this tattoo.
And tattoos are always very personal. But I think that obviously this touched something else that was even more, you know, added it extra.
And we had, I mean, I didn't anticipate that. I had no idea. And at that point, it was like, it was super obvious that this was like bigger than us. You know, like we had brought this into the world, but it wasn't like for us. It was for all these people who it was really going to help, you know, who they really wanted this thing. They really wanted to feel it. So we kind of took it on as like a mission to help those guys and gals. Right. And so we just like dove head first and I started doing interviews everywhere. And I said, you know, I'm like on. It was like, first it was Reuters, and then it was CBS, and then it was NBC, and then it was, you know, I'm going and doing satellite link-ups and just totally thrown into it. And I'm basically on all these things, and they're going, so you made this thing, and it's going to exist? And I'm like, yeah, it's going to exist. It's going to exist. It, like, in a few weeks, we'll have it, and everyone can have it. It's totally
going to
exist.
My team's working on it, and you're like, it's me. Right?
Kind of.
Yeah.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, luckily, I have experience in this kind of thing, so, like, it's not too far off for me to be like, I can make an app, right? I made a few for insurance companies and stuff back in the day, whatever. So I wasn't totally lying.
Right. No, absolutely not. Yeah. But you got to, like, you got
to But I had to be a lot more confident than I probably deserved to be at that point.
So, like Silicon Valley, was there a lot of, like, VCs and all those type of things, or
not a lot of VCs,
angel investors,
so
that kind of thing.
It kind of was like, it was like, okay, we got to figure out the best way to structure the company and how to how to do the investment. And I definitely got like thrown head first into learn the life of a startup, you know, CEO. Luckily, I can learn things quickly, and I had really good people to help me. I mean, I probably spent twice as much on lawyers as I needed to because I was relying on them to tell me what to do for a lot of things. And, like, now I would not have to ask any of those same questions, which is great. Like, I paid a college education's worth amount of money to lawyers to give me that education, which, you know, is a little frustrating, but also now I have that and I can help other people because I've learned it. So, you know, I guess now that's kind of where I'm at, where I want to be able to help other people with that stuff so they don't have to go through spending way too much money on lawyers. But anyway, it was a lot of that.
America is very litigious.
Yeah.
There's way too many lawyers for everything.
Well, and like, you know, we got lucky. So, you know, there were a couple different like angel investors we were talking to, and, I got a phone call. I got an email one day, and the email was like, hey, we want to set up a meeting with you. And it was somebody from Lionsgate. And I was like, oh, awesome. Like, I would love to have a meeting with you guys. And so I went out to dinner with this guy, and he was like, yeah, like, I was driving down the freeway, and I was listening to K-Rock, and they were talking about your Soundwave tattoos. And so I looked it up, and I called my assistant and told him I had to come talk to you, and I want to invest in your company. And I was just, it was just like, whoa, like, you know, because I go to these, like, startup things now, you know, networking groups or whatever, and everyone's constantly going, like, how do you get an investor, and how do you, you know, and it was, like, I got the phone call and was out at sushi, and the guy's like, I want to give you the money. Literally wrote me an email term sheet and a $100,000 check, like, almost on the spot, which was awesome. So we could actually, like, the things I was saying we were going to do, we could, like, actually do now. And turns out, like, you know, he would end up investing a bunch of money and getting other people involved, and, like, definitely could not have done any of this without him. So super grateful for that. And, yeah. And then just the lawyers were trying to build a foundation of how everything is set up so that then it can grow properly. Because I think, you know, a lot of companies, when people start companies, you'll get like 2 or 3 or 4 people together, and they'll be co-founders, and everybody will invest all of their time because it's not just going to be a bunch of money, and they will get the thing to a certain point, create this foundation so that then the money can come into this like structured container that is built for it. And because our thing had already gone viral and the idea already existed, and because I had already patented and all these other things, it was kind of like around me, you know, and in a large part, Juliana too, but kind of us together through me as the conduit for it, right? And so it was different. Like, it wasn't just like we, like, when you start a startup, there's like this prescribed way to go. And it's like, start a C Corp, a Delaware C Corp, and then, you know, go through this accelerator program. And then, you know, if you have this lawyer, then that lawyer has his, you know, built-in VC network. And so by going through that lawyer and having them prepare all of your things and doing your C Corp and structuring everything a certain way, then that lawyer is going to pay themselves a small percentage to do all of that stuff of your equity. And then they're going to present your company to their own VC firm, who is then going to give you more money because it's structured the way the VC firm wants it to be in the first place, so that then they can do that. But because they've already done all of those things, that VC firm is fairly certain that they're going to be able to go to the next VC firm and raise 4 times as much money and say that you're worth this much more money. And it's like
it's like a pyramid scheme a little bit.
I don't want to say that.
I did.
Yeah, but if you look at all the big unicorn IPOs that happened this year, they all lost money. Like, they were all valued in the like multiple billions of dollars range, and as soon as they were released, they all dropped like 25% in value like overnight. So if you want to look at like what is actually valuable and like what is perceived like there's a huge disconnect in between what is actually valuable and right. what is perceived value. I mean, like, Uber still has never made money.
Yeah.
They're, like, losing money constantly.
Amazon, too, I think.
Amazon makes a lot of money.
It does now? Yeah.
But they don't pay any taxes because they learn how to offset all their revenue. So there's, and there's, like, you learn... It seems like, based on what we're taught in high school and through culture and whatever, that like if you do hard work and you do everything the right way and whatever, that like things should work out for you and whatever. And what you realize once you start working with all these lawyers and all these different people and everything is like, oh no, there's actually this like other, there's the way that things are written to be, which things are really happening in. But if you're just like a small business person and you're just like trying to make things work and you're just like not really, you know, you don't have a whole team of legal people behind you and whatever, you like don't figure out like, oh, I could do this thing and the company won't have to pay any taxes. And not only will the company not have to pay taxes, but then I can offset my like if you create an LLC, you can disproportionately allocate losses to investors. So if they invest a bunch of money, that like that's the reason why to have an LLC instead of a C Corp. Anyway, like you like years and years, like, I'm 2 years into this training now, and it's a lot. And I think once you look at what's going on with tech and apps and you know, VC backed companies or whatever, a lot of it is like a hocus pocus marketing thing.
Right. I mean, the I think the film The Big Short was kind of about that too, with the whole financial investment thing that dropped.
I'm not a financial guy. That's not my specialty. I do not claim to be any kind of specialist or whatever, but it is very obvious that we're like on the precipice of another kind of like 2008 scenario. And, you know, as a CEO of a company, I'm thinking about that a lot, but also as like a dad who has a family and is like trying to like take, you know, I'm thinking about that a lot too, right?
So you're like, I'm going to wait on buying that Ferrari.
Oh my God. Like that day will come. I mean, I don't know. I think rather than buying a Ferrari, I'd rather like build a school somewhere, but.
You seem the type. That's what I brought up as a joke.
Yeah. One day, hopefully.
Yeah. So you do tattoos as well. So do you have a particular style that you like to do?
Yeah. I mean, I love that. I do tattoo that as well. Kind of like on the side.
I always feel like the show has become about everything but tattoos. So I'm like, I just bring it up again and then we can talk about other stuff again.
Well, I mean, it's interesting about that, right? Like tattoos are kind of this like cultural thing that we use to like identify ourselves for ourselves, but also for each other. And there are so many correlations between people who are into tattoos and are part of the tattoo community and care about tattoo culture, you know, more than just like pretty pictures, but like where it's going and like where like we can influence it and like what influences that are happening in it are maybe things we want to discourage, you know, like there, but like everything around that is like so intricately woven into the actual tattoo culture and everything that's going on. So like, I can't separate them, you know?
Well, I guess like, because if people are listening and they want to get a tattoo by you, what are your specialties?
Oh, yeah. No, I feel you.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll bring it all back down to earth.
I get the big idea stuff.
Yeah.
I get that.
No, I mean, I like sacred geometry probably more than most things. Like, I've been working on like my whole torso doing
a bunch
of like.
Is that what you
have
in your hand?
Yeah, I did my hand.
Oh, you
like,
did your hand.
Yeah, so this is all the Platonic solids with a dual Fibonacci spiral coming out of it, kind of galaxy in the middle. And it's like, I think of it as like an energy portal where these are all charging up like this center point, and then that energy like radiates out of the center of my hand. And so really, like, you know, I've learned, and I used to work with Mike DeVries making a bunch of like educational documentaries, or not documentaries, but like, you know, he did a tattoo on my leg. We filmed it. He did a couple other ones. We filmed them. And then
he's made the how to do tattoo videos, right?
Yeah. I produce those videos for Mike.
Okay.
And so I got to learn a lot from Mike by making those videos. Like, I was sitting there, you know, the video's 7 hours long, and so I got to sit there and watch his video like 50 times in a row. Yeah. And I've done all the styles in a very general sense, and like not ever super specialized in anything. But it was when I think like I started learning about all the sacred geometry stuff and getting really into like the patterns behind everything, and what I just got so much more interested in like black and gray and like pattern work and mandalas. I do a lot of mandalas, but now, I mean, like, it changes, it's always changed. Now I'm more into like heavy black work, you know, like I want to do like big like form fitting neo techno tribal, like where, you know, we're accentuating muscle tones and shapes, but it looks like circuit boards, you know, like kind of overlaid on top of the skin or something. Like, that's like, if I could just like sit and create my own thing all day, like I would be putting these huge black geometric circuit boards on people.
We're heading towards like the cyberpunk.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, I never thought of it like that, but yeah.
Well, yeah, because I see a lot of the, what do they call it? I totally lost the name of it, but like Outrun, that 80s kind of idea, and then cyberpunk, and I see them both kind of like, there's this resurgence between the two aesthetics where people kind of want that right now.
I mean, I'm happy to have people who keep wanting me to do the kind of stuff I want to do, for sure. I mean, definitely the best tattoos are the ones where people come in and they're like, I really like your style, just do more of your style right here. And I'm like, okay, that sounds great.
How did you get into sacred I've never even heard of this
sacred geometry?
The
short story is psychedelics, but the long story is, you know, I had a buddy who's really into yoga and like body work and energy. He was like, his family is very deeply lineaged into body work, like energetic body work. Not quite Reiki, but like, you know, along those lines.
Yeah.
And so when he was learning about all of that, he was kind of teaching. Same buddy, I moved up north. Okay. And so I spent a lot of time with him. And in the process, I don't know, whatever, we got our hands on a DVD by a guy named Nassim Harriman. And Nassim Harriman is like a scientist out of Canada. And it was like this 8-hour DVD of like, you know, 4 DVDs, whatever. We just sit there and watch it. And he explains like the fundamental shapes of geometry that are within all the platonic solids and what those mean and how they correlate to other things in nature, like music. You know, it talks about the pyramids and all the shapes in the pyramids and how they're all like exact, and those measurements actually correlate to the distance between the earth and the sun and the moon, and how all of those things are interrelated. More or less, it started bringing all of these different esoteric things I had been interested in into a like unified theory of everything is connected and related with each other. And at first that was just like a neat sounding thing. You know, I was like interested because I had been interested in, you know, in art and in science and all these different things. But when he kind of put all these things together, like I always knew there was something missing from what I had been told or what I was taught or whatever. And finally, when this guy Nassim Harriman explained all these things in his DVD, it was just like everything clicked. And it was because he boiled down the structure of nature into something that was its most fundamental form, which is just shape. And those shapes are correlated to wavelengths, which is just all energy, and how all of those things are all interrelated. So through learning through Nassim Harriman stuff, then I started learning, like, he's kind of, I don't want to say he's a pseudoscientist, but he's like a self-taught, self-guided, like, the like, you know, academic scientific community, like, kind of looks down on him a little bit, which they, I don't think is, you know, I think that happens a lot to people who are, like, visionaries, who are, like, coming up with these things, but right.
Joseph Campbell, who came up with the, you know, the myth.
Yeah, the monomyth.
The monomyth.
Yeah.
And like he was kind of ousted, but.
The monomyth is everything.
But now we have Star Wars, so.
Yeah. I'm obsessed with the monomyth. I love, yeah. But so anyway, it was Nassim Harriman, and then that kind of led into a bunch of other things, you know, and a lot of it had to do with like unlocking these secrets that had been kept that suddenly started showing up everywhere. Like, as soon as I learned how to see the connections between all these things, then it was like every logo for every corporation ever is made with very intentional sacred geometry and colors to specifically affect your brain in a particular way. And there are people who have been studying this for hundreds of years, but they kept it locked up in secret societies. And, you know, I was just always very interested in that kind of stuff. And so once the information, I felt like maybe with the internet and like the mid, you know, 2000s or whatever, all this stuff just started coming out and everybody just like, there was no way to suppress information anymore, which unfortunately it's starting to a lot more now. It's getting like, the internet is not the same place now as it was then.
Now it's kind of dangerous because some people have access to information that is not.
Yeah, I'm willing. If you rabbit hole anything on YouTube, you're gonna end up in a really like not awesome place, right? Like that's one of the unfortunate things they're trying to figure out how to solve right now is like YouTube is this rabbit hole into extremism, which is not the answer. You know, like anything extreme is black or white, and everything is really a kind of gray area. So, you know, there's a lot of good stuff there, but anyway, it took a while to digest all that sacred geometry stuff and then to realize, oh my God, there's all these guys in Europe and in Southeast Asia who are already doing these really epic sacred geometry tattoo bodysuits, you know, like Philip Liu, who I had no idea of because he wasn't like pop culture tattoo TV out here. Not that I ever really followed that much, but like, you know, it wasn't somebody that I was super aware of, or like Zed Lahed. I didn't know who that was. I didn't know. And I could name 1,000 of, you know, of these people and even trace a certain amount of their lineage between each other because I care so much. But, you know, there's 30 years or more of European you know, heavy black work, geometric bodysuit stuff that was going on that I was completely not aware of. And because of finding out about like sacred geometry and all this other stuff over here, I discovered that and was just completely blown away. And it just made so much more, I was just drawn to it. That's like all I was thinking about. And then kind of more modern, you know, in the last 4 or 5 years, I started doing a lot of ayahuasca to heal myself and to like work on a lot of stuff that I needed to process and deal with. But in the process of going through these ayahuasca ceremonies, I ended up kind of finding a lot more value and doing a lot more tattoos and stuff for like kind of like spirit animals, like energy totems, like things for people that would like help, they could like carry with them and use as like magic talismans that are encoded with energy that will help them to be more than who they are, like what they want to be, rather than like who they feel like they're like, you know, stuck as or like the victim to.
Whatever. Yeah. I have a friend that does, or he used to go to shaman and do all that. Cool. So I totally hear that. So let's kind of get a little bit back to your shop as we wrap up. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the other people at your shop?
Yeah.
Shout out to them.
Yeah. Major shout out. So Jamie Parker, opened the shop in March. And I used to work with Jamie over at Mike's, over at MD Tattoos. And Jamie actually apprenticed with Mike and then worked with Mike for a long time and then went over to Hidden LA. And when Hidden LA closed down, then he opened a shop not too far from there called Tribute Tattoo Studio. And, you know, I didn't tattoo for the most part during the Skin Motion launch and founding and everything because I was just so overwhelmed. And I had a lot of people who were asking, and I couldn't deal with everything at once. And I didn't want to be giving people tattoos while I was, like, distracted by email or whatever and lawyers. So once everything with the company kind of settled down a little bit, I started looking to maybe get, like, another private studio. Because I've worked in private studios pretty much, like, the majority of my career. You know, the last, like, 10 years of tattooing has, for the most part, just been, like, all done private. I mean, I would pop into shops and hang out, but not for too long. So I started looking at for new shops and stuff, and Jamie's got this beautiful shop over in West Hills, and it just always gotten along with him. He's such a cool guy. And then Nick Arroyo, he is a really good tattooer, takes everything like really serious and like always make sure to do his like absolute best on everything, which actually is like super inspiring for me, because sometimes I'm like, you want how big of a thing and how fast of a time for how much money? Like, okay, whatever, sit down and I'll make it work. But like, Nick will not sacrifice anything to like make this thing like super perfect. And so, you know, respect, because sometimes I'm like, hey, I'll give you half a sleeve in 6 hours, that like it will be 6 hour half sleeve quality, but if that's what you want, like, so, but yeah, I'm stoked there. It's a really laid back vibe, and you know, I definitely think that like being able to encourage each other is like a major strong point that I'm happy to have, rather than just like working alone, because I spent so much time working alone.
So it sounds like this is the first time you've had like a tattoo home.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, totally.
That's awesome. Well, Nate, thank you for coming by today. We could talk for another 2 hours, I know.
Yeah.
Remind us where we can find you.
So my website is natesigurd.com. And then everywhere else, it's just Nate Sigurd, Instagram, Twitter. And then Skin Motion, Soundwave Tattoos or Skin Motion, skinmotion.com, or the app is Skin Motion. And
it's on iOS and Android?
Yep. Yep, so iOS and Android. Yeah, and I'm super happy to be here. Thanks for having me. And I would love to tattoo anybody who's listening or watching who wants to come through and get a tattoo. Like, hit me up.
Yeah, I mean, that's what this show's about, amongst other things. Again, he's Nate Sigurd. Yeah. Sigurd, did I get it right? From Tribute Tattoo Studio. For more information, go to kpcradio.com. I want to thank you all for listening. I'm Anthony Sanchez.